Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. Before we jump into what's happening in the last year in our city and state and look ahead at this coming year with our guests, including Catalina Byrd, Lester Spence, Julie Berkowitz, and including, of course, Anthony McCarthy here co-hosting, let's turn this over to WEAA Traffic and get you home nice, sound, and safe. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Support for WEAA is provided by TNT, Ray Romano, Scott Pakula, and Andre Brauger are in the new TNT series, Men of a Certain Age. An all-new episode is on tonight at 10 on TNT.
The ramp to 97 southbound, coming off of 3 northbound. Garbage truck on its side off the road. They did shut down the ramp, and that will be closed for the next several hours. Check on the roads brought to you by Advil. 95 northbound, heavy from the Pulaski Highway to the Beltway, and some slowing on southbound 95 between Russell Street and the Beltway due to earlier road work. Vehicle fire interloop between York Road and Delaney Valley Road. Heaviest on the interloop from the Baltimore National Pike to 795, and again from Charles Street to Lock Raven Boulevard. Broken water main in Towson, Old Court at Joppa, crash Edmondson Avenue at Ingleside Avenue, Baltimore City accidents north at Elmont and Park Heights at Falstaff, and a broken water main, Minnesota at Pelham. Get the facts and join millions who count on Advil for relief. Relief doesn't get any better than this. Advil. I'm Joanna Campbell with Baltimore Area Traffic.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. Happy New Year to everyone out there. I hope you had a lovely holiday with your families. I hope you had a just joyous New Year and are ready to tackle 2010 with eyes wide open, seeing what's around the corner. I know there's a lot of struggle going on here, people worrying about losing their homes, people on the edge about their jobs, and people also very joyous about their families and hopeful for the future. We're going to talk about that in terms of our cultural, social, and political condition here in the city of Baltimore and the state of Maryland. Look a little bit back at 2009, but really with a look ahead at 2010 and what that may bring us here in Baltimore City with the trial of Sheila Dixon, with we've seen the murder rate, they say, go down. But what wasn't in the paper is how high and serious the robbery rate is in Baltimore and what that means, what's happening with our young people, budget cuts in the state of Maryland. One of our guests today, who knows as much about Detroit as he does about Baltimore, will kind of look at this interesting juxtaposition of those two cities because of the recent elections in Detroit that elected a whole slew of new council people and a new mayor that came in as reformers. We hadn't seen a slew come in our city for a while here in Baltimore, so we'll talk about how maybe we can get a slew fest going here. The number here is 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.org.
.org.
Thanks. .org.
Steinershow.org.
Anthony McCarthy, of course, co-hosting here on Monday. Anthony, good to have you.
Great to be here. Happy New Year, Mark.
Happy New Year to you. And you can hear him every Friday at 5 o'clock here in this time slot. His program also produced by the Center for Emerging Media, where he's the Center for Emerging Media's first fellow in media. We're joined by Catalina Byrd, who I met on Square Off the other week, and she is host of On Point on WOLB 1010 AM, Tuesdays at 11. Also has Catalina Byrd.com/radio.
Good morning. Good evening.
Dr. Lester Spence is with us. Dr. Lester Spence is professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you,
too. Good to have you back, man.
Man, it's good to be here, my man.
And Julie Berkowitz will be here shortly. She's on the way over. You know, this is Baltimore in traffic, and she's coming.
She had a deadline she had to meet before she left that newsroom.
And she's coming from
Annapolis,
so she's making her way here. That's right. The Baltimore Sun government reporter who has also covered crime and many other issues in the city. And we'll get to that issue when she comes in, so we'll want her there for this part of that part of this discussion. 410-319-8888. So I'm curious for all of you what you think were the highlights of last year and where you think this year is going to take us. What do you think that...
Don't everyone answer at once. Highlights.
Go ahead, Catalina.
I watched the inauguration. I saw healthcare get further than I've ever seen it, as we discussed on that square. I got a real strategy that I could wrap my mind around, whether I agreed with it or not, for Afghanistan and Iraq. I saw a lot of good things come out of there. I choose to dwell on the good, not the bad.
Well, being objective about all of these issues, I think that certainly the Obama inauguration early last year was a historic moment for our country, for a lot of people. I think they had extraordinary, we all had extraordinary expectations of Barack Obama. I think we're going to get into the next hour talking about how he lived up to some of those expectations and disappointed on several other points when it comes to the expectations of a lot of us who follow and make our living following this administration and others. I have to tell you that I am so pleased that healthcare became a point of contention in the Congress. I think a great many compromises were made. A lot of people sold out. A lot of people stood their ground. And I think that there's something to be said about how far we have actually come in reforming healthcare in this country. We have so far to go if we are to really make healthcare affordable, accessible to all people. I think the Dixon trial was a historic moment in our country, our city's history. We've never had a city mayor go on trial. The outcome is yet to be determined, of course. A hearing this week for the mayor, very important hearing this week for the mayor. And I think that another thing, Mark, is the environmental consciousness of this city has been heightened, thanks in some part, in measure, to Sheila Dixon, but also a lot of the watershed groups doing things differently, working together, five of them merging in the next couple of months for watershed organizations here in the city of Baltimore, coming together with the reality of the economic situation we find ourselves in. Five of the most prominent watershed groups who've been working to keep our city clean, clean up our waterways, our trails, are going to merge and bring their staffs together, their boards together, their fundraising prowess together. And I think our city is all the better because of our attention to the lakes and streams and the watershed community here in Baltimore. A lot of really positive good things, a lot of sad and sad things in the city as well.
Dr. Lester Spence, I also forgot to say about you, Lester, that you're also part of the barbershop group on Tell Me More.
Yes, I am. You know, it's funny because here I am, a political scientist, and all I can think about is the fact that my Lions won two games.
There must be a God.
That we lost Michael Jackson. And that's actually really serious. And that, the Obama stuff and the health insurance reform stuff, not really health care reform, health insurance reform stuff. It's gone a lot farther than we expected, and then the economy tanking. So there are a whole bunch of other stuff wrapped up in there. Those are the things that just immediately came to mind. Some of them cultural,
or lack
some
of
political.
Health insurance reform.
It is really health care insurance.
That's right.
To me, it's healthcare reform for the insurance industry.
For the insurance industry.
Yeah.
That's really good. Let's start us off with, as a man who grew up in Detroit, father was in the auto industry, working class kid, coming to Baltimore, professor at Hopkins, and you see Detroit has always been given this rap as one of the most corrupt, downtrodden cities in America, and now you have this new mayor, and David Bing, and all these new council people, and you see what's going on in Baltimore with Sheila Dixon. I think and nothing really moving in some ways in this city. Though that's not fair to say, because Sheila Dixon's done a lot of stuff, the crime rate is down, which we'll talk about, and other things as well, but... talk a bit about your perspective on these two cities.
So one of the reasons I like Baltimore so much is because it in some ways reminds me of Detroit on the East Coast. Newark is probably a lot closer, but still, you know, working class, Rust Belt city, a certain type of, you know, you have black class integration. That is, you got black poor people, black working class, middle class, black ballers, all in the same group. And they've got not only the same history, but they've got the same future going forward. So when Sheila Dixon went through her legal troubles, the first thing I thought of was Kwame Kilpatrick in Detroit just in 2008, right? And in looking at the trajectory of both cases, on the one hand, it's like both of them were got into legal trouble for what appears to be minor, really minor things, right? So with Kwame Kilpatrick, it was a relationship with his chief of staff. It wasn't like he was stealing, you know, reams of money from the government. And Mayor Dixon's case, it was a matter of a series of minor gift cards, right? So it's like they're dealing with the same type of stuff, but in addressing the challenges, what I'd say is two things. One, I'd say first that it's important for people to understand that what Detroit and Baltimore have gone through and are going through may be hitting them first, and then because of unique aspects about their history, they may be publicized more, but these are dynamics that are happening across the country, right? So if you think of Baltimore, Detroit, for example, as failed cities, we could think of New York and California as failed states, right? Mm-hmm. We could think about Wall Street as a failed industry, right? So the corruption that Sheila Dixon and Kwame Kilpatrick represent, to the extent they represent corruption, is part of a much larger picture. That's the first thing. The second thing is that it's really important for people to take this opportunity, as it looks like citizens of Detroit have, to figure out what leadership should look like going forward. So as you note, they pretty much turned over city council. And it wasn't just that they turned over city council. There are a number of people who are 40 and younger, people who are first timers in politics, right? So I think that this is an opportunity, and we don't know what's going to happen with Mayor Dixon yet, but this is an opportunity for us to really think about not just what our politics should be about, but how we create mechanisms of transparency and accountability to make sure that whoever we elect, right? I mean, I was at the inaugural for Obama last year from 4 a.m. till 12 and till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I was there, but he's not the guy. He's not the solution. Just like he's not the solution on a national level, it's about creating mechanisms that whoever we put in place here in Baltimore, we can hold them accountable and make them do what it do.
I think the issue you raised here is really important. Like, I see you're about to say something, Anthony. I want you and Kelly to come in on this. I think that you hit on a really important point here, that it's about how we imagine and envision the city and what it could be. I'm really become less concerned about whether Sheila Dixon remains mayor or is removed, or whether Stephanie Rawlings becomes acting mayor or she doesn't, because I think it's beyond them and what we have to start thinking about our city. To me, it's no longer about them. It's about how we think about what we want this city to be and what it can be. It's like someone said when we were together, I think you were with me, I think, when someone was talking about how in New York during the snowstorm, Michael Bloomberg took some of the stimulus money during the snowstorm and put, what was it, 10,000?
It was a huge number. I remember.
Men, unemployed people to work.
They put a call out.
The city so they could have money for Christmas.
And people told him, you can't do that. Don't spend the stimulus money like that. And he kind of looked and said, why can't I?
Right. You know, one of the things I like most about Mike Bloomberg is he came in and he forfeited that salary. I'm already a billionaire. Give me a dollar. But he had a vision from day one. They have fought him on everything, from removing soft drinks from soda machines in schools. They fought him on everything for no other reason. He's a Republican, of course. But he has a vision.
Well, he's actually an independent now. He left the Republican Party.
I'm sorry,
Kenny. Mm-hmm. I know. I would have left him, too. Oops, I already did. But I think that more importantly, what we need to see in this city is like what they've done in Detroit and put some faith in our young people. You know, when I do a square off with you, or I do Anthony's show, the emails I get back are from my under 30 colleagues and demographic that say it's awesome to have a voice locally for what we believe in politically. We're thought to be stupid when it comes to politics. We have opinions that have never, ever been asked for or aren't appreciated. But what we've done is we've had this institutional integrity and faith that we kept generationally giving back to people who were children of other people. They don't lead or legislate in the same times that their parents did. This is a different era. We need different ideas. If we're not willing to take that faith and put that in someone new who doesn't have a name that you recognize, you can't expect to get anything different.
So that's really important. And we have there's several generations at this table, different generations at this table. So I'm curious, going back to Lester Spence, picking up on what Catalina said, talk about how you see what happens outside that box of who gets elected in terms of what a community can build.
So when we think about politics, what we normally think about are, if a given proposal is put on the table, we think about maybe who supports it and who doesn't. Or we think about maybe what money went into that proposal, what money doesn't. And that is political, right? But for me, what I'm really interested in is the range of options that that are totally ignored and not even put on the table. The example of Michael Bloomberg spending money in the unknowns to help people out of work, right? That's the perfect example. That was something that nobody thought of as being a legitimate option. Nobody would have ever thought about that, at least in this modern era of how we use government spending. Then he thinks about it. And then he gets shot down, but then he's able to basically ramrod it through. What we do when we bring in new people, whether they are younger people or whether they're people from a wider political spectrum or outside of the normal political spectrum, what they can do is increase our understanding of what the political is, right? Of what resources are at stake and what resources can be brought into play in dealing with the problems we face. Right. And that's something going forward that is really essential, because the challenge we have is that our understanding of the political is so narrow. Right. It's so narrow. Right. That there are all these ideas that we just never end up discussing. So we end up reproducing the exact same problems. And to this degree, it doesn't necessarily matter whether someone's young or old, but what matters is whether they are like stuck in that normal political rut that says you become a committee man, then you do this, and then you're elected.
Right. I think one of the interesting things, if we are studying Detroit and we're thinking about what is happening in Baltimore, a young man that I've known who's a former anchor in Detroit on television, ran for city council in Detroit, was elected to the city council, and he was stunned in our conversation.
One of the new ones you talked
about. Yes, one of the new ones. Because he was focused on what is a vision for a new Detroit. And he kept throwing out these new ideas. But what excited him was the elders of the village who came to him and said, I'm going to put my faith in you. I'm not going to buy into – I mean, Detroit, let's be honest. Detroit is it's a machine city. I mean, Mayor – Coleman Young was there for a long time. They built an enormous amount of alliances and loyalty, but they thought differently about what their city could look like. And I when I talked to him, I said, well, did you work with the other members? I mean, there was such turnover. And he said, no, you know, Anthony, I was just focused on getting elected.
Yeah, because he had problems.
He had a lot of problems, but he was elected. And now he sees an enormous opportunity in the turnover in this council, not of building alliances and making a name for himself, or, you know, let me set myself up to become the president of the city council. He sees enormous opportunity because the people of Detroit made a huge statement about where they needed their city to go. Baltimore hasn't evidently reached that point.
No, we have. We keep trying, but we don't quite get there.
You know what it is? A lack of a line of demarcation between emotion and passion. Be passionate about what you want, but stop being so emotional and caught up in believing that someone saying they want to change the city means that it's in a crappy state now. You have to grow. You have to progress. So every time someone comes in talking about new things, it's not necessarily an insult to what is the status quo.
True. Yeah.
But we can't become stagnant. We will allow ourselves to fall behind.
Let me introduce Julie Berkowitz. It's Berkowitz, right?
Bikowitz.
Excuse me, Julie. Julie Bikowitz. I'll make sure I apologize.
Extraordinary writer.
She is. Baltimore Sun Government reporter. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming all the way from Annapolis to get here. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio.
Thanks.
You wanted to jump into what you've heard us talking about? Just about why we started out talking about why Lester Spence grew up in Detroit, just came back from visiting his family, knows politics very well all over the country, but in those two cities. And about looking at those two cities and this kind of new blood coming into that town with new ideas about what to do. And I said, in some ways, I think this is beyond Sheila Dixon and beyond Stephanie Rawlings Blake. It has to do with what kind of city we can envision and see. And just your thoughts. You've covered this for a while and intensely.
Well, one thing that I've noticed covering both the city and also the state is Baltimore seems to have we're at a point as a city where there's not evident new blood coming in to politics. And it's interesting to watch. I mean, it seems as if this is the perfect time for some new leaders to come forward and try to, you know, get the city on a different track or move it forward in some way. But that really hasn't come up yet. And I'm not really sure why. And that seems to be what you all were talking about when I came in.
And we don't seem to also think about things that are just not the normal way of thinking about what you do with the city. I remember the last time, Paul Graziano, I will say the thing about Paul Graziano, all the critique he's gotten over the years, and I've pushed him a lot, is that he, in the last conversation we've had, has been open to thinking about different ideas, and even he'd said so on the air. The last show we did with him, he said, for the first time ever, from his perspective, that housing was a human right. I've never heard a housing commissioner say that. We pushed the issue very hard, and he said, yes, I agree, it's a human right. Well, that, to me, is a huge leap forward to say that housing is a human right in the city of Baltimore. Or the idea that maybe we should take some of this stimulus money and not just give it to developers, but figure out how to reinvent communities. Or the idea that you take some stimulus money and do what I've been calling for years. I always say that there's nothing more powerful than the thug who has turned to peace. And all these men and women who come out of our prisons who really want to live a different life, helping them live that life and become community leaders, community organizers, working with youth, turning things around a different way. Think about things, doing things in ways that nobody is kind of really contemplating doing to turn the city around. So you can't just turn around by bringing in middle class people. You've got to turn around by bringing in, by taking care of the people that are here and building a new world with the people that are here.
And it's not just a class thing. It's an age thing. One of the reasons you don't see it so much, Julie, is that when we, I've been doing what I've been doing for 10 years. I'm 28 now. But when we come to elders and want to work with them, we say we want to learn from them. We bring new ideas to them. This is what's going to resonate within our demographic. It's laughed off. Oh, you're naive. You're young. Now they're getting to a place when you're watching Twitter and Facebook blow up and they don't know how to use these social media sites. Now they're coming to a place. Now they need us. And now they want to listen. But we've always been here. I'm not the only politically knowledgeable active person in Baltimore under 30. They just didn't want to listen to us.
And you see a unique opportunity, Mark, and we've seen it in the homicide rate dropping to a historic low in the city, although we saw a small tick up this year. But even in the way the police commissioner envisions policing the city, even the way our CEO of the school system envisions the relationship between North Avenue and teachers and the classroom and parents. And like you said, our housing commissioner sees housing as a human right. There are opportunities. There are these seeds that have been germinating for years in this city that we began to see. But Mark, the part where I think we hit the speed bump is that there has to be, and I'm a political person, there has to be political will to push these things along. And what we don't have are strong political leaders at the state level or at the city level who see dramatic out-of-the-box thinking and change as important. They see that their political organization is important. They're making sure that the people who voted for them 4 years ago turn out this time, not anybody else, but those people who came out 4 years ago. I need to get them to come out again. It doesn't do me any good to reach out beyond that. There is a change, a sea change, that needs to take place in the political thinking of the city. And the only way that change takes place is if something that happened in Detroit were to happen here, where there would be such upheaval in the political process, where you give the power to people like Catalina Byrd and other, you give power, not necessarily in age. I'm not hung up on that because I'm now 40. Right. But give it to people who may not have not traditionally been part of that political process.
Anybody, other comments before you open the phones here, Lester and Julie?
You know, as we're talking, the first group I'm thinking in my mind is like the Algebra Project, the kids who, you know, specifically the Baltimore chapter. Yeah. So I'm thinking about, so what type of mechanisms do we have in the school system, outside of school system, to grow people who are organizers, right? What type of things do we have that group of kids can be elected to office, like later down the line? What type of mechanisms can we create where, if it's not necessarily about electing that group of kids, but it's getting people young? Now, this is where age is important. Getting people as young as my kids, like as young as 5 years old, to understand the role of politics in the city, can understand how to change their material environment, right? What type of things can we do to create that? And that's really our mission going forward. You think about what 2010 is supposed to be about. That's what it's supposed to be about.
Julie?
Yeah, this is a scary time, though, I think, because the financial crisis is so dominant, it just threatens to silence everything else. I think our current political leaders, they just have a lot on their plate to deal with. And what I'm hearing in Annapolis and also in Baltimore is just we it's difficult to think about moving communities forward and moving on without dealing with this elephant of how do we even keep people employed? How do we even keep our budget balanced at this point? So I think this coming year is going to be an interesting one, because I do wonder if everything else will just be silenced to keeping us in the black, or as close to the black as possible.
Let's open the phone to get some listeners' thoughts as we talk to our guests. You just heard Julie Bykowitz, who is Baltimore Sun government reporter, now stationed in Annapolis, covers both the city for a long time. Lester Spence, Dr. Lester Spence, professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University, is also a voice that you hear on Tell Me More in the Barbershop Group. Catalina Byrd is host of On Point on WOLB 1010 AM and also at CatalinaByrd.com/radio. Anthony McCarthy, of course, is our co-host here every Monday, and is the host of the Anthony McCarthy Show here on WEAA every Friday at 5 p.m. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And Queen, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you very much, Miss Queen. number one, happy day, happy week, month, year, and decade.
Thank you.
That's number one. Number two, Anthony, I love him very much for sentimental reasons. Anthony, this is Miss Queen from Bolton Hill.
How are you?
I'm very well and good.
We saw each other at a restaurant recently.
We saw each other. Anthony, I was so happy to see you. Okay.
I was happy to be seen.
Yeah, you're fine.
You looked beautiful. You were all dressed up for the holidays. Anyway.
Yeah, I was with my pastor.
Wonderful.
My pastor had me out for dinner. Okay, number three, I beg to differ and I disagree.
Go ahead.
The mayor of Bemore and the mayor of Detroit, they did wrong. It wasn't minor what they did. They did wrong and they are accountable. I used to have Sheila Dixon's picture up in my office next to Ben Carson. I took Sheila's picture down. She needs to bow out gracefully. I am an international individual. Sheila Dixon has embarrassed me and the city of Baltimore internationally. I know Jay Leno. He made fun of Sheila. Come on. He made us a joke. Come on now. Wake up.
Before we go to break, I'm going to let Lester take a shot at it, because he was the man who made that comment.
Yeah. I was making that point to make a different argument. So I actually agree that both Kwame Kilpatrick should have been forced out much earlier, even though I was a supporter, even though my family grew up with his family. I believe that Sheila Dixon, even though she's been a really good mayor, I think that she should actually step down, because what they both did was they violated the city's trust, and that's the most egregious thing you could possibly do. I was trying to make that case to talk about a range of corruption, right? So there's a range of practices that we could think of as corruption, and if you think about those range of practices, what they were convicted of, what they were found guilty of, was minor in the range of corruption. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to correct that. I didn't want to make it seem like I thought.
And
they were
for our listeners' sake, Kwame Kilpatrick was actually convicted or pled guilty to perjury. He
right.
lied about the relationship. Professor
yeah.
Spence mentioned the relationship. He wasn't forced out because of the relationship. He was
right.
forced out because he lied about the relationship right. under oath.
Let's take a short break and come right back to our four guests and more. And Veronica and the other callers coming in. We're going to take your calls at 410-319-8888. We're going to think about how we envision our state and city in a different way. We're also going to take a look at some hard state politics coming up. One of the new faces in Congress is Don Edwards from Prince George's County. One of the lights of the progressive movement in Congress seems to be facing a challenge from the state's attorney, Mr. Ivey, and I think we'll talk about that and more when we come back. Stay with us. 410-319-8888. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Johns Hopkins Medicine. For the 19th consecutive year, the Johns Hopkins Hospital is ranked number one by U.S. News and World Report in their annual Best Hospital Survey. Find out more about the nation's top hospital at hopkinsmedicine.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite, Baltimore's free monthly magazine of ideas and innovation. This month, Urbanite welcomes the new decade with a second annual Breakthroughs issue, highlighting 10 simple ideas that could change the city. Urbanite is available at over 800 locations. You can visit www.urbanitebaltimore.com for a list of drop locations. In the studio with me is Julie Bykowitz, who is Baltimore Sun Government reporter, covering the session coming up starting in January. And by the way, let me remind you all to go to steinershow.org to sign up for your tickets and join us live in Annapolis next Wednesday for the Annapolis Summit at St. John's College. We'll be interviewing the governor, president of the Senate, speaker of the House. You'll hear this live on EEA. It'll be on Delmarva Public Radio on the Eastern Shore. It'll be streaming live on the BBJ website as well as the EEA website. And you'll have your chance to ask the leaders of the state your questions and have a little breakfast to boot.
We're taking care of the transportation. We'll get you from the stadium right to St. John's campus.
That's right.
Good free breakfast. Free parking. It's going to be exciting.
All you teachers to take the day and take your students and bring them down. Mm-hmm. Just let us know you're a teacher and how many tickets you want for your students. We'll make sure they get there. Let's just sprint to bring all of his classes down that that day. All right. 410-319-8880 is the number here. I just reintroduced Julie. I apologize. Dr. Lester Spence, professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University, who is also heard on Tell Me More. Catalina Byrd, host of On Point on WOLB, 10:10 a.m. and at catalinabyrd.com/radio. And, of course, Anthony McCarthy, the voice you just heard, host of the Anthony McCarthy Show here at WEA and co-host here with me every Monday. 410-319-8888 is the number. Should we go right to the phones and get a couple calls, and then we'll leap into some new things. And Veronica and White Marsh are on the air.
Hi, I have what I think may be one of the problems, maybe it's a solution. When I was growing up in East Baltimore, one of the things that I think Mayor Schaefer started at the time was the whole Clean City campaign, or I forget what he used to call it, and he made sure there was a metal trash can on just about every corner in the city. And later, when I was a adolescent, I remember the Afro paper. If you came to their offices, they would give you paint, and you'd get tires, and you'd go back to your block.
Right.
And whichever block kept it clean, you know, would get a block party. And it seems like when I was growing up in the city, you know, we took pride in our neighborhoods and pride in our communities. And it seems to me, even now, the communities in the city that take pride in their community and get together as a group, as we did, and decided who was going to be captain, who was going to be co-captain, who was going to sweep which day of the week and wash the steps and so on and so forth. It seems to me that the communities that take pride in their neighborhoods, even today, have less problems with the criminal element coming into that community, because the criminals out there say, oh, wait a minute, these people are on the ball and they're sitting outside and they're cleaning their steps and they're looking out for each other. You know, that's what I noticed. I have a relative who lives in a city, and I went to pick her up one day, and there's literally not just trash in the street, but I mean, like, bottles, cans in the gutter. And I said to her, why isn't anybody cleaning up around here? She said, oh, well, you know, there's a gang in the neighborhood. It's like people are afraid to come out, and I feel like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if there's a political solution to that. I don't know if it seems to me it starts with the community. It starts with the people who live there. Because in my neighborhood where I live now, that would never happen. You know, if somebody's going over 30 miles an hour, there's a call made to the precinct that, hey, somebody's going over the speed limit. You know, that wouldn't be tolerated where I live. And when I was growing up, it seemed like that kind of stuff wouldn't be tolerated. That's being tolerated now, trash in the street. And
Veronica, you raised some important issues. I mean, I think that I remember the Afro Clean Block campaign that used to take place. I just talk about this for a minute. I mean, was that such a different era that can't happen now? Those ideas about community and control or at least even if it's a semblance of control, you think is in control, and it may not be as in control as you want it to be. But I mean, I wonder if we're beyond. We've gone so far beyond that. There's this kind of looking back in nostalgia that maybe existed on some levels and didn't.
No, the key point of what she said was there was an incentive to do so. Now you have those areas in certain blocks of Sandtown that create gardens and they make it pretty, but nobody comes and says, hey, job well done. It's beautiful over here. So you get a little bit discouraged when you're fighting an element that's next door to you, that's your neighbor, and then the people that say, this is what you need to do to make a difference, this is what you elected me to help you do, don't come. Where's the incentive?
And you will see, to Sheila Dixon's credit, there was so much criticism and people questioned this idea of going to a two-day-a-week trash pickup. But in most communities, if you were to talk to them, it's working. Because what happened is people became conscious of when the trash would be picked up and when it would not be picked up. And you were only going to get two chances at it, one a recycling day and a regular trash day. And people bought into it. And the city did a lot of legwork. They educated the communities. They made cans available. They made recycling tubs available. And so we know that when communities are made conscious and they have a partner in government, it works. In my neighborhood in Reservoir Hill, people were adamant that you were going to do it on the days we all got the postcard that said you could put trash out. And when people were not doing it, the city was called, our council person was called, and we made sure. So I think Veronica's hearkening back to a different period of time in the city of Baltimore, Mark. But you know what? In some communities, in a lot of communities, that community consciousness and involvement is very much alive. And I know in your neighborhood, when you grew up in certain parts of Park Heights, it was alive. And now there are places like Reservoir Hill, like Sandtown, Winchester, like certain parts of Poppleton, like even in some of the rougher, more difficult communities, you see this reactivism because people realize, look, the only way we're going to fight gangs, the only way we're going to fight violence, and we see that working, we see numbers going down, is if we take control. Or even if you don't take control, that's a kind of maybe an overstatement, if you become engaged. And we see it working. Now, there. Go ahead. I'm sorry. You have that Mark Steiner look.
No, I'm just listening.
So I'm very
just
curious about what's going on.
I wonder if there's something different. Part of the difference is that, and before we move on to kind of the politics of the moment here, is that, not that I want to harken back to the days of segregation for anybody's business, but there was a cohesiveness in neighborhoods that's different because neighborhoods crossed class lines.
Mm-hmm.
There was a balance in neighborhoods that gave a stability that we've lost. And what you have now are neighborhoods full of people who are out of work, families that are absolutely dislocated, families are in deep trouble, housing which is intolerable. Not that, I mean, housing was terrible back in the 50s and 60s, too, in some poor neighborhoods in this town. I don't want to get that impression that everybody was living in a rosy life. They were not, obviously. But there's something, there's a dislocation among masses of people in the poorest neighborhoods of this city that I often say, and maybe people won't agree with this, I often said is the worst condition that I think black folks have lived under in America since the end of slavery for a lot of different reasons.
What I'd say is that I appreciate everything that's been said. It's important. So people have alluded to, Mark and a couple of others, have alluded to the danger of nostalgia. There was no moment in Baltimore's history where you didn't have some neighborhoods in which stuff didn't work. And it wasn't because the people in them didn't work. It's because they were ignored, right? They were they were ignored at best. They were stepped on at worst. So it's important to that we not reproduce that somehow in inferring, and I'm not saying you're doing this or the caller is doing this, but there's a danger in inferring that the reasons that some neighborhoods don't work is just because people don't have enough pride, and if all of a sudden we gave them pride stickers or pride shot in the arm, everything would be good. It wouldn't. The second thing is that what's different now than say 40 years ago is that if we think of risk as something that's distributed, right? Risk has been more distributed downward to people who are to people who don't have means than at any point in modern history. So what that means is that you're now, if you don't have health care, you're responsible for taking care of it on your own. You know, those of us, there was a population that have pensions to look forward to. Those of us under 40 don't know what a pension is, right? So there are all these ways in which we're forced to take care of stuff on our own, and we just don't have the capacity to do that and be fully engaged parents and be fully engaged citizens and be fully engaged partners. It's extremely difficult, right? And that's the thing. So when Anthony talks about government working, what we've got to do is redistribute risk and get government to be active partners in our lives again. And that process will in turn give communities the more efficacy to deal with crime and the problems that they're facing in their local day-to-day lives.
Joe, you want to ask that for Hilton Folks?
And now also there just are no jobs. I mean, that's one major thing that's different about now versus back then. There's this whole class of people, of citizens here, who don't have a way to get employment legally. And that creates all sorts of problems that emerge in communities, that create situations where whole neighborhoods are just overwhelmed and unable to deal with crime and trash and just being neighborly. I mean, you have to have a job before you can be a good citizen in some ways, because otherwise you just get so snowed under by everything you have to deal with.
That's true. I think in many ways, from parental solidity to crime to other issues, the reality is ending poverty, giving people work, is the best solution to all those things.
All that stuff is related to unemployment. All that stuff is related to unemployment.
Let's get back to the phones, then we'll take a switch and look at some of the state issues facing us here. 410-319-8888. Larry in Bethesda, you're on the air.
Hey, good evening, folks. How y'all doing?
Very well. Welcome.
All right. I just want to just a comment basically on the one gentleman said about the mayor of Detroit and the mayor of Baltimore in reference to, you know, it being minor or, you know, whatever words you use. I forgot whatever words you use. But let me tell you, the mayor of Detroit, the three police officers, two or three police officers that were investigating him, he had them removed. Then they came back, and they won a lawsuit against the city of Detroit for about $6 to $8 million. Okay, that's true. The city of Detroit didn't have that type of money to waste like that. We all know the deprivation and everything that they're going through right now. Now, the mayor of Baltimore, and I'm going to be real quick on this.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
The mayor of Baltimore, it wasn't the $400 or $500. As far as the cards, the gift cards, it wasn't that. She took money from poor kids, whatever program they had, okay? And then she would come out of court and say, well, I got to go do the business of the people. I got to run the city. You know, it's a mindset with some politicians that, you know, they think that, you know, some people, some average people, some black people, whatever you want to call it, they think people are stupid. And people are stupid, you know. So that was serious stuff that they did. And it was a slap in the face, especially the black people, because we come from 400 years of slavery or whatever. And then for us to get in position that we're in and to do that to our own people, it's a slap in the face, man.
Brother,
thank you very much for listening to me.
Thank you for calling.
Brother, I just need you to do me a real quick favor. Listen to the tape of the transcript, because I answered this question earlier, and we only have 15 minutes left. Listen to this tape. I elucidated on my points. Thanks for calling.
Let's talk about what's going on. We talked about a new politics coming to Maryland, and I was one of the things that really hit me reading the paper over the weekend, the Baltimore Sun, that is, was about the races where there's a real political challenge coming in 2010. I mean, the primary is coming this year. People are lining up for this primary. Anthony and I were talking about the fact that Martin O'Malley is going to face Democratic opposition. You were saying, who are you saying was running against O'Malley?
Well, George Owens is anticipated to announce fairly soon.
He will be announcing.
Within the next week or so.
He will be announcing.
And he's a former veteran secretary in the Ehrlich administration, former conservative Democrat member of the state legislature. And I anticipate that Wayne Curry, the former Prince George's County executive, executive who is now affiliated with the Murphy Law Firm. I anticipate that he may even mount a challenge in the Democratic primary as well.
And that, is that what you're seeing, Julie, as well? So the rumors
we're hearing that. But that's been rumored for so long. It'll be interesting to see if it actually happens. Mm-hmm. I think that's a mystery for now.
And we know that First District Congressman Cradaville is going to face serious Republican opposition at the very least in this coming election. It's going to be a very tough election for him. But the one that really shocked me the most, that I was not expecting really, was the word that Donna Edwards, who won this election because she won against the congressman who many people perceived as corrupt and as being a kind of a for the banking industry and not for the people of Prince George's County. And she came in as this kind of progressive light in many ways and won that election. Now, State's Attorney Ivy from Prince George's County, who will be in the middle of his term, is not just rumored. People are saying that they think he's going to announce to run. Let's talk about that election for a minute. That election to me is, to me, could be one of the most significant ones, but then we'll go back to the governor before the time is out. What do we all think and know about this particular race? And how real are those things about General Ivy, I mean, State's Attorney Ivy running for her seat, Julie?
Well, that's slightly off my beat, so I don't try to take on more than I actually already have to cover.
A very smart woman. Good response.
But I mean, I've read the same things you have, so... another thing that is just going to be terribly interesting to see what actually shakes out. This time of year, it seems to be all rumor. You know, you've got Bob Ehrlich running for virtually everything.
Finally for Senate and governor at the same time.
So, you know what we'll be telling, Mark, is that there is a period of time, and it's coming up within the next 4.5 weeks, where a lot of these committees will have to give a report. Mm-hmm. And we'll know who has been actively fundraising. Mm-hmm. They have to do their annual report to the state on their finance committees. And we're going to see a lot of activity. Glenn Ivey has been raising a lot of money. And he's very clear that he believes that Donna Edwards is focused on too many liberal and progressive issues and not focused on the...
Public statements they've made?
These are conversations that I have had with people who are affiliated with him. Plus, he has said this. And not everything he says makes the Baltimore Sun or goes on the radio, but he makes a lot of statements. He was he is a very popular state's attorney in Prince George's County. He was rumored to have aspirations to be governor of the state of Maryland or Prince George's County executive.
Or running for attorney general. That was one of the things.
Or running for attorney general. But he dropped out of that pretty early. Right. So I think that it's amazing to see that he feels there is a constituency that would take out this first-term congresswoman who took Al Wynn out the second time around. She lost to Al Wynn in an election, then came back 4 years later and won against him with a progressive coalition led by Acorn and a lot of other people who pumped money from all over the country into her district.
And that'll be the soundbite when she runs. It'll be Acorn, 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 juxtaposed with videos of what were they doing, consulting hookers or something crazy. But I see in Maryland a Democratic dissension that's almost akin to the Republican dissension nationally. And it's going to be such a free-for-all. The part that we can't lose focus in is that the people will get lost in the middle and fall through one of those cracks while everybody else is making career political moves. What's going to happen for the people of PG County? Their school systems are almost as bad as Baltimore City public school system, if not worse. They've got just as many economic issues. And when you step outside of those cul-de-sacs where they all live so comfortably, there are hoods over there just like we have here in East Baltimore where those people are going to need real leadership and representation. What's going to come for them? That's the better question. I could care less who runs.
That's a great question. That's good. That's an important point.
Well, I think it's very... Unfortunately, Mark and I don't have the luxury, Catalina, saying we don't care who runs. Because it is very important not only who runs, but why they're running. And I think that's why a lot of people are watching Glenn Ivey. I think that's why Don Edwards, who's a darling of the left when it comes to health care, when it comes to the war in Afghanistan, when it comes to the war in Iraq. She has stepped out there on the national scene and she's really become a real strong national figure. I mean, it's nothing to turn on CNN and see her. There's nothing to turn on Chris Matthews and see her. There's nothing to turn on MSNBC and my favorite show, Morning Joe, and see Donna Edwards speaking for the progressives who are very disappointed in this president, who are very disappointed in some of the economic decisions decisions he's made when it comes to the stimulus, and that's going to be a huge fight in Prince George's County.
Lester?
Yeah, I usually agree with Chris on that. I usually don't think this type of the individual matters, but in this case, the forces arrayed is a lot larger than the two candidates, right? So there is this, one of the challenges that those of us on the left have had is that we haven't done a good enough job of organizing and maintaining pressure between electoral cycles, right? So if we've got a circumstance in which many people are either saying that the president is who he's always said he is, or he's somehow sold out, and that's causing people to be more apathetic, or at least that's what the sense is that people on the left are going to be more apathetic and not turn out. So if that actually ends up being the case, then we have somebody like Donna Edwards, who I was so glad took out. Somebody like Donna Edwards, after one term, will be in trouble. Right. So for that extent, it is important to actually look at this race and to see. I mean, I don't like to take one race and predict 434 other ones, but, you know, we can kind of sort of see what type of problems the left has going forward electorally.
And Mark, when we look at the potential for damage to Martin O'Malley through these primary challenges, he's got to, if he is challenged by George Owens, and let's say there's an off chance that a Wayne Curry gets in the race, and there may be one or two others, he has to spend money. And he has to fight to keep that Now, most likely he will prevail. He's a sitting Democratic governor in a Democratic state. But then when you spend that kind of money and the can of worms is opened by your primary challengers, it gives your general election opponent a huge advantage because they didn't have to spend that money.
This is closer to your bailiwick.
Yes. Of all the interesting days in January, which there will be many, January 20th is a day I'm really looking forward to because that's when we can view campaign contributions, the latest round. And I think that'll be really telling just to see who's been so active and what they're thinking to do, how much more money needs to be raised. I think there will be some huge surprises in that filing.
And what do you think are going to be the pivotal issues, if any, that we will face in the next 3 months in Annapolis?
It's going to be an interesting term. The budget's going to dominate everything. You know, we're hearing that local governments are going to, which have largely been saved in this whole process, even though it might not feel that way. Local governments are probably going to be hit a lot harder this year than they were last year, particularly health departments. We've got some really interesting education issues bubbling up. There seems to be some relationship issue that's reemerging between Nancy Grasmick and O'Malley. They have a difference of opinion on when the state should apply for some significant federal funding. That'll all be coming to a head this month. We've got energy is always a big issue. We'll see how much people want to get back into the slots debate because there's, you know, obviously there's a couple of licenses left to give out. And then aside from that, it'll just be waiting to see who runs for governor, waiting to see who runs for these positions and how much people will be hurt.
I mean, politically, it's going to be a very interesting and strange year.
Well, I'll tell you a word to the wise, if I may.
Catalina Byrd, go ahead.
I would suggest that they be mindful of the rhetoric they use. We're talking about left and right. We've seen an influx of independent, unaffiliated voters come into this marketplace in this new time, especially after the election of our president. So you're going to want to be careful about using divisive rhetoric in your campaign, when you're speaking, even when you're talking about a candidate and with a candidate, because it excludes people automatically with just the use of one word, like left, right. Talk about the issues, and the person that focuses on the issues more than they do the party or the affiliation, I think, will come out the victor and all parties involved.
Interesting point. I think that's something that could be explored for an interesting conversation on the air, just that whole idea.
Yeah.
I mean, whether it is a question of left and right, conservative or liberal, progressive or whatever the other words are that we use, and people just wanting some common sense leadership in this state, city, and country.
And, you know, Catalina just hit on something that stuck in my brain. And regardless of who the candidate is, they try to speak to that group she was just talking about. Because if they're perceived as, to be honest with you, and I hate to use these terms, but if they're perceived to be too far to the left, they understand that that constituency is probably already on board with them. And the conservatives that they would like to get probably aren't going to vote for them. So they do speak, and we do see, as Catalina said, this influx of independent voters registering in the state of Maryland that people need in these general elections, that O'Malley's going to need in these general elections, that Bob Ehrlich, if he runs, is going to need in these general elections, and that Donna Edwards is going to need if she is challenged in this primary. Mm.
Folks, I wish we had another hour, but we will. I'm going to get all of you back on the air with us. And it was Julie Obikowitz. It's great to have you on the show. I want you back.
Absolutely. And I'll see you next week.
Yes, you'll see me next week. Mm-hmm. And we'll see you during the session. Kelly and Burr, it's been a pleasure to have you on for the first time as well. And we look forward to having you back.
Always great hanging out with you.
It's good to have you here. Dr. Lester Spence.
My man.
He's so cool. Lester Spence is cool.
And we'll be talking very soon again and come up with some interesting shows on politics, hip-hop culture, and more together to get here on the air.
I'm with that.
And Anthony McCarthy's not going anywhere.
I'm here. I'm going to be with Catalina tomorrow on her show.
There you go. Busy week.
It's a good
week. Thank you all for being here. We're going to take a very short break. And when we return, we will switch guests and take a look at national and international issues with folks Sherilyn Eiffel, Richard Vetz, and Dietrich Muhammad will be in the studio. And so don't go away. Stay with us.